All right.
Hang on, I took my ears off. All right, I'm ready for war.
Jump right in there, Captain Storm.
Back to the bin.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am here with my comrade in arms, Mr. David A. Pascarella.
Reporting doing, for duty. Oh, let me
take this off. Dave and I are here to discuss World War II with you.
Back in the trenches of the great WW2.
The big one.
The big one.
But that wasn't the war to end all wars. That was WW1, right?
Right. They had such a good time, they decided 20 years later to do it again. Bigger, improved.
Bigger, better.
True.
God. So, we are continuing with our look at the Storming Paradise series. Today we're looking at the third issue of that. And we, you know, in accordance with that, I have pulled a war book as well of sorts. And I guess for sake of full disclosure, Dave and I have already attempted to record this once. Not only attempted, we actually did record this once, but due to the greed of StreamYard, we were unable to download the recording that we did. So we have to re-record it. Thankfully, and this is for me at least, I don't know about you, thankfully, it was long enough ago that we did this. We didn't, you know, we're not doing it like back to back. It was, a month or so, a month and a half, whatever.
Yeah, about that.
I don't really recall the key points of the discussion. So at least for that reason, I feel like the discussion is relatively fresh because I don't remember what we said. Generally in these, we start with the Storming Paradise book, don't we?
Yes, I think so. Typically. So, but we could do whatever you want.
What I want to do is I want to have the recording from the first time we did this without having to pay money for it. And
let me explain to the good folks at home why exactly we don't have the original recording. Because when one of us signed up for StreamYard, let's give him a commercial. It was supposed to be X number of hours for free. Then after we recorded, it was, oh, you have to send us your credit card information and we'll let you cancel at any time. If you weren't honest with me from the beginning, I'm certainly not trusting you with my credit card. But back to the war.
What is it good for, Dave?
Well, if you're in the arms industry, it's pretty good.
It does help the economy usually, and it's good for some clever stories. Other than I'm not really sure.
As the Ferengi used to say, you know, peace is good for business unless you're in the arms industry. Then war is good for business.
So Storming Paradise. Where did we leave? Do you remember where we left off on Storming Paradise? Because I don't really recall off the top of my head.
We had invaded Japan. We followed the Nisi translator. We've met John Wayne briefly. And I'm going to leave it there because I don't want to spoil what's coming up in this issue. It's pretty easy to figure out. The invasion of Japan is underway. And the reason we're invading was they tested the atomic bomb and it was more powerful than they anticipated. And it wiped out all the scientists. So we've now had to bring troops in that were going to occupy Europe are now storming paradise.
Oh, that's very clever.
I came up with that, right? Not bad.
If I remember correctly, I liked the first issue pretty much. And I was a little, I didn't dislike the second issue, but I think I found it to be a little bit more confusing and less involving.
The problem with this series is, and I'm going to be blunt with you, if you're going to read it, it's six issues, I think, right? Six. Read it straight through. You can't really do the stopping and coming back, a month or two later, because they're not characters you really know, and you kind of forget what went on beforehand and have to refresh. So that
Yeah,
would be
so
my.
I would suggest that people who are listening can do one of two things with that if they want. Well, they could do three, one of three things really. They could read it as we put them out, which is not going to be consecutive, or they could read it all and then just wait for us to come out with the episodes about each individual issue, which I would say is probably the best way to do it. Or the third would be to hold on to the episodes until we've concluded them and then listen to them all when you read it all. But
I
anyway,
say,
we're up to
read
issue
it
three. We're
through.
halfway through this thing.
Yeah. Okay. Storming Paradise number three. This was cover dated November, way back in 2008. An on sale date of September 4th of 2008. Written by Chuck Dixon. Artist Jackson Geiss. Letterer Patrick Brosseau. And colorist Carrie Strachan. We open up December 11th, 1945. Tokyo Prefecture is pounded by a flight of B-17 bombers. Clouds of smoke from the raging inferno below ascends into the clear sky, and with it comes the smell of burning human flesh. Even the bomber crews evoke sympathy for their hated enemy as the fires race through the mostly wood and paper city. The Emperor is secure in the bunker under Edo Castle. With the constant thump of exploding American bombs as a soundtrack, enshrouded from view behind a screen, Hirohito addresses his military leadership, who listen, kneeling face down in the presence of their august god and emperor. Hirohito speaks. Our only hope for Japan and its people lie in our resolve. Our will must remain strong. Our will must be greater than the invaders. If it is not, then we will be slaves of the Americans. Japan will be no more. If enough American blood is spilled, they will seek a negotiated peace. Under the terms of such a surrender, we may retain our honor. Anything less is unacceptable. Meekly, one of the admirals protests that they have nothing left to fight with. He is swiftly rebuked by the Emperor, telling them to attack with what they have. As he makes a cup of tea, the Emperor proclaims, "Death is nothing, pain is nothing, survival is all. Our future is paramount." Suddenly, a vibration causes the Emperor to scald his hand with the tea and to cry out. He dismisses the pain and his men with the final order to attack, only attack. December 21st, 1945, Miyazaki Prefecture, Kyushu. GIs find themselves under attack by a civilian wielding dynamite. The attacker is killed, but their tank is put out of action. The GIs move into a town where they have need of the language skills of Jimmy, the Nisi translator. Jimmy questions a Japanese prisoner regarding the road ahead. The prisoner, I'm sorry, let me back that up. Jimmy questions a Japanese prisoner regarding the road ahead. The prisoner, in turn, questions Jimmy, asking him if he is a prisoner and if he has surrendered his manhood to the Americans. But Jimmy responds that he is an American, and he's trying to save the prisoner's life. The prisoner spits in his face and is immediately shot in the head by another soldier. Prisoner number two is much more talkative. Jimmy learns that the Japanese have flooded the rice paddies 5 miles to the east, and there is a trench filled with gasoline across the feeder roads to the south. Jimmy is told the prisoner will be taken care of, and as they pull out of town, Jimmy hears a gunshot. December 22, 1945, Mitsubishi Factory, Nagasaki Prefecture. Two children hunt rats in the wreckage for a stew to eat. While in the home of Dr. Isia, Father Daniel Monahan enjoys a traditional Japanese dinner with the doctor's niece, Fumiko, and two German scientists. In German, one German expresses concern that Fumiko talks too much, but the other dismisses it, as it's only to a priest. They speak of their work, unaware that Father Daniel understands. Then Fumiko reminds them they are to speak English. One of the German asks if Father Daniel is English. He responds that he is Irish, and he shares no sympathies with the English. He is by faith and by birth an enemy of the crown. He explains that he does God's work, no matter where he finds himself. And most of his countrymen feel for the oppressed by the English. The Germans remark that the Irish repatriated to Germany to join the fight with the Wehrmacht. And they share many goals, the Irish and the Germans. Father Daniel feels they should speak less of such weighty matters for Fumiko's sake. At the end of the evening, Fumiko's mother thanks Father Daniel for coming and for his concern for the child. She hopes he will come again and that the Germans will take him back into the city. Christmas Day, 1945. The GI celebrate Christmas dinner with a terrible meal and complain about how much worse fighting in Japan is than in Europe. Suddenly, a sniper takes out a GI. One of the Americans chases down the sniper and is beating him with his rifle until his buddies arrive and shoot him. As they chat over the body, the GIs can't understand why the Japanese won't surrender. And one volunteers that they are going to have to kill every last Japanese in the islands. New Year's Eve, December 31st, 1945. At a Navy hospital, grenades are rolled into the operating room as surgeons work on a patient, blowing the place to pieces. More grenades are tossed at an ambulance by a child, and as the boy makes his escape, he is cheered by his friends, as he who rains death upon the emperor's enemies, Grenade Boy. And that is issue number 3 of Storming Paradise. What'd you think, Paul?
I thought that this one did an interesting job of showing like contrast with different things that were going on. And I kind of felt like that was the theme that we were getting here. You know, we have Hirohito acknowledging that they can't win, but sending out the people, sending out his troops with the thought of, at least the way, you know, what he says is it's the thought of if they can put up enough of a strong front, they can negotiate the best peace when it's all done. To put themselves in a position of less weakness, or you know, I think that would be a better term than more strength, because I don't think they have strength at this point, as far as the number of troops and, you know, how everything's going. But then, like, I'm left with the question in my mind of, is this Hirohito acting honorably for his country, Or is it this insane need to win where, his life isn't the one that's on the line? He's sending out other people to be effectively kamikazes. So
Or
I
is it
thought that
he
was
just,
interesting.
or is it he
I'm sorry?
wants to save it? Maybe he just wants to save his own neck too.
Yeah. So there's a lot as far as strategy. And I was going to, Bill and I had a thing where he used the word strategery, which is taken from Raging Bullets, and I had put a song in that episode, so you can go back and find that one. But anyway, is it a strategy or is it, what's his motivation? What is he actually seeking to do? And is it a strong strategy? Can they put up enough of a battle where they're going to be able to negotiate a more peaceful surrender, so to speak? Or is it just, is it a kamikaze thing where it's like, we'll go down and, but we'll put up the best battle we can before we give up? Then, there's the defiant prisoner that ends up getting shot in the head against the soldiers who aren't going to take any prisoners anyway. So, it's like ultimately that there's a contrast there. We have children eating rats. Well, we have a doctor's house where they're living very well. And then we have, children involved in the war with Grenade Boy. So, there's a lot going on in this issue. And I did find this one, although I didn't really find myself pulled in by the characters because it's jumping so quickly from scene to scene that you're not getting a chance to really get to know any characters. But I thought the situations that they were in were interesting, and I found it to be good reading. Whereas, like I said, the last issue I kind of felt, like I didn't feel connected to the last issue. This one I felt more connected to.
Yeah, I agree. I also wonder how much of this, and when I read this the first time, back when it came out, and I read it again, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. And then this third time, I began to wonder if this was a commentary on what was going on in the real world at the time this was published. Because this is at the time of the surges in Iraq. And you start to wonder, is he trying to say, a political commentary about what was going on?
And if it is a commentary on that, what are you, how are you interpreting that commentary?
I think it could be. First of all, I want to say it took me 15 years to make this connection after having read it about three times. So I'm going to say it's written in a subtle way that I didn't get the first two read-throughs. If it is a commentary, I think it's a commentary of hey, we can't just roll over people, and think we're not going to pay a price for it. That's what I think the commentary is, if that's what he's making. But the
I think.
Japanese had, exhibited in the war, not an inability, but a lack of will to surrender. That they prefer, look at the casualties, Iwo Jima, Okinawa, it would have probably been very, very high casualties if we had to invade.
And but I don't know what the population of Japan is, because I mean size-wise it's significantly smaller than the United States or the Allied troops. And at this point Germany is already defeated. So you would think that they would be hard pressed to have the manpower to stand up to the Allied troops at this point, which is the way it's being presented in this story. But they are being defiant to the end. And again, when you deal with the take no prisoners attitude of some of the American troops, they might as well be defiant till the end because if they're going to die anyway, why help the enemy? So it's interesting from a historical point of view to try and think about, at what point is this accurate to what might have happened?
Well, I also think that, Americans at that time would have had a lot less qualms about killing large numbers of the enemy. Whereas today we're more, first of all, today we get everything is instantaneous news. Back then you wouldn't have heard about what was going on in Japan for a significant amount of time, and the press wouldn't have published everything. And I think the people in charge would have had less qualms about, okay, we're just going to carpet bomb this whole, you know what I'm saying? But I do think you would have been up against a population where it would have been, everybody's a sniper, everybody's got an IED and that kind of thing.
So it's while we may have had them outnumbered, their backs are against the wall. So, the more you back somebody against the wall, the more dangerous they become. So, it's what I like about this issue. I think what more so than the previous one is this one felt more thought-provoking to me.
Yeah. But what else I found interesting is the whole conversation at the dinner with Father Monahan, and the Germans are speaking only in German. There's no translation in the book. I typed it into Google Translate and found out what they were saying. But it's interesting that he chooses not to give it to you. That if you want to know, you got to look it up.
Yeah, that is interesting, actually. I didn't look it up. Was there anything in there that you felt was particularly telling?
Not really. Not really. But was it just an odd choice, so to speak?
I think I again, I don't remember exactly how I reacted to the prior issues. I know I was higher on one than two, but I don't remember what I said about the artwork or what I was thinking about the artwork and that. But looking at it now, I'm thinking this style of artwork, Butch Geis on this, it fits the tone of the book that we're reading. I think it's very often a very dark and dirty kind of look to it, a muddy look at points. And I think that's very, very effective and evocative of what we're supposed to be feeling here.
Now, the artwork is perfect for this story. I'll tell you what, in looking at my notes here now, another message he's trying to say, which is completely true. The poorer you are, the more you're going to suffer in a war. The richer you're not going to be, unscathed. But it seems like no matter what country you're in, if you're a rich guy, it doesn't seem to affect you as much as if you're a poor guy.
Yeah, well, if everybody's expected to tighten their belts a little bit because of the war effort, the poor people, they don't have as much room to tighten, because they're already living in a poor situation. Whereas, I guess it's not a very nice message about democracy and just the class, well, not even democracy,
It's not even.
class breakdown.
Right.
They're not saying good things about the upper class here, and they're the extent to which they are willing to tighten their belts. So that's a message we're getting here, and I wonder if that is in any way relatable to the era in which this came out, as
So
far as the
just
message it's trying to send.
while we're on this, did you have people in your family who fought in World War II?
My parents were too young at that time. They were, I think, trying to think.
Yeah, they'd be
They were
way too young.
like, 10 years old during World War II. So they wouldn't have been able to do anything with that. As my grandparents, none of my grandparents did. So, no, I don't think I had anybody. I had cousins who were in Vietnam, but I did not have any family members that I was aware of in World War II.
My
You?
grandmother's brother fought in World War II. He was a scout in the U.S. Army and fought in North Africa and Europe. And he was captured by the Germans and spent the end of the war in a prisoner of war camp. Saw a lot of terrible things.
I'm
But
sure.
the irony is, they always said they were happier he went to fight the Germans, because the Japanese never surrendered.
It's interesting, and that's what I guess we're getting here in this book.
Should we rate it?
Sure.
Let's start with the cover. The cover for me is a mixed bag. I get what they're trying to say. It has a series of photographs spread across the cover. Most of them look like, either sweethearts or couples from the home front. There's one or two that looks like it may have been taken, on a post-battlefield, like a soldier's in front of a tank, maybe like a trophy. And in the backgrounds of all these spread out photographs is a telegram from Western Union, which I assume is bringing news that it's probably a husband was killed in action. It's a dark cover. It's a powerful cover. I think when we did this last time, I had some issues with it, but having had this opportunity to revisit this cover, I think it's more effective than I thought the first time. So I would give this cover a solid B plus. The interior art, I love the interior art. It's dynamic. Where it has to be, it's very detailed as to specific places that you could pick out of, a history book, the equipment, the B-17 bombers. The one issue I have with that, though, with the B-17s, is I kind of think they were retired by then from service. I don't really think they were using them for bombing in 1945 because they'd been replaced. But I guess who knows if it was bad enough, I guess we'd be throwing anything in. But they're dynamic. I would almost say he probably used it because it's such an iconic image from World War II. So I'm giving the interior art an A. I love this art. And the story is good. I think it is. It's a bump up from last time. It's giving you enough. You want to know where this is going. The Father Monahan, there's something there. It's interesting. I want to see where that's going to go. And of course, you want to see where this is going to go as far as the war. How much of a change in history are we actually going to get to see? I'm giving the st story an A minus. For an overall grade of, I'm going to say an A minus on this book.
I don't think I'm feeling any different from you on this one, but I'll go through it just the same. I like the cover because the cover it's got a Western Union telegram and then it's got photos on top of it. I can honestly not tell, are these somehow, drawing renderings of these photographs with a real photorealistic feel to them, or are they actual photographs? I'm thinking there's some computer use in here to kind of create them the way they are. But, very, very, they look very accurate for the time, at least to my eyes. So I think there's it's got a lot going for it as far as that goes. And if you've picked up the first two issues, you're absolutely going to want to pick up this issue based on the cover. And if you haven't, I think it's intriguing enough that it may make you look for the previous two issues. I don't know that this story is a jumping on point if you hadn't read the previous two, But I do think if you saw this and you were intrigued by it, you'd want to get the other two and start, start it from the beginning. So I think it's very, very effective. So I'm going to say a B plus on the cover. The interior art, as I said, I think it's very, very stylistically fitting with the story that we're getting. So I'm going to say an A on the interior art. And the story really kind of intrigued me. Again, we didn't get a lot of characterization of individuals. We did, I think the character who I got the most characterization from was Hirohito, of all people. But I thought the questions that it raised in my mind and the thoughts, that came up, I think were all very, very interesting. So I'm gonna say an A minus on the story, and overall, I'm gonna give the book an A minus.
You know what? I almost think it needs maybe a text box at the beginning that all it has to say is, in a world where the A bomb busted, Japan is invaded. For anyone who jumped on in the middle, that's all you really need.
Actually, yeah, you could, if you know that that's the premise, you could take it from there. They could use at the very top of the first page, they could have used one of those things like where in Spider-Man, they'll say, Peter Parker was a student at a whatever scientific experiment who was bitten by a radioactive spider, blah 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 blah. And it's just that one paragraph at the top. You don't even have to put a commentary box in there. You just have that. And I think that would be enough to get the reader enough up to speed that you don't feel like, you're lost in any way. So I decided to go with a World War II book that is much less realistic. And as such, it's written by Bob Haney, who's famous for his realistic storytelling. I picked Brave and the Bold number 84, which teams Batman and Sergeant Rock, of all people. It's got a cover date of July 1969, and it's got a price tag of 12 cents. The cover is by Neil Adams with Gaspar Saladino. It is written by Bob Haney, penciled by Neil Adams, inked by Neil Adams and Joe Kubert, lettered by Bob Oda, and edited by Murray Boltonoff. The synopsis, the story, well, the cover shows Batman holding Sergeant Rock in the I always forget the pronunciation. Pieté, I believe it is. Pose.
The
Pietà. A Michelangelo's famous rendition of Mary holding the lifeless body of Jesus. And that is a very, very common comic book cover over the years, that type of look. And it says, is this the end of Easy Company? And is Batman to blame? Story, again, I already gave you the credits on it. It's titled The Angel, the Rock, and the Cowl. And I'm taking the synopsis from the DC Wiki. When Bruce Wayne is called to the Gotham Museum to see the statue of the Archangel Gabriel smuggled out of Nazi-occupied France during World War II, because a man with a German accent called to claim it, Bruce informs him that the real statue is still in France and the one in Gotham is a fake. They are then attacked by a man Bruce recognizes as Von Stauffen. Bruce then recalls back to a day during World War II when he was in London and his friend, a British spy named Digby, is killed in a bombing. So Bruce covered his mission for the British forces, traveling into Nazi-occupied France. Bruce meets up with Sergeant Rock and Easy Company along the way, investigating a strange amount of wine coming out of Chateau Rouge. Bruce learns that it's occupied by Nazis led by von Stauffen. As a spy, Bruce is unable to learn what the secret is behind the wine, so he tries as Batman and comes to blows with Rock and Easy Company again, who happen to be in the area. However, during their scuffle over a bottle of Chateau Rouge, boy, I have a tough time with that word, wine, They find that the Nazis are smuggling weapon parts in the bottles to be used during the D-Day invasion. Batman and Easy Company then work together to stop Von Stauffen. In the present day, Bruce is saved by the sudden arrival of Rock, who knocks out Von Stauffen, as he had been tracking Von Stauffen since after the war. The story is, it's not your typical Haney silliness, because it's almost got a, you know, a feeling like it's important, but some of the conceits to it are very silly. First of all, the fact that, you know, in 1969, Batman, who's probably supposed to be about 30, somewhere between 30 and 32 years old, somewhere in that range, would have been active during World War II, 25 years earlier. You know, that makes no sense whatsoever. Also, the fact that apparently Winston Churchill would send him on a very, very important mission just because somebody else died, and with no pedigree whatsoever as a spy.
And he happened to be in the room.
Yeah. So you have to kind of just brush over those or squint enough so that you don't really take them seriously. Otherwise, I thought it was kind of a fun story, and, you know, just in general. I think the artwork is, you know, it's Neil Adams, which I love pretty much everything by Neil Adams. I find it even more fascinating that obviously Neil Adams inked some of this himself, but some of it's inked by Joe Kubert. And Joe Kubert had a very, very different style than Neil Adams. You know, but Sergeant Rock was one of Joe Kubert's common books that he did frequently. So we're adding two very different styles, at least in parts of this. And I think it works really well. I don't know if it would work on a typical superhero story. But, you know, I mean, Kubert also did Hawkman. So he did do, you know, superhero stuff. And, you know, I'm definitely on board with this. I enjoyed this very much. What'd you
think,
Dave?
To me, this story is that time Bruce Wayne became James Bond. Because it's clearly, it's like a James Bond story. He arrives late for the mission after getting it at the last minute. First, you know, ignoring the whole, oh, England's going to send you. Who we don't even know who you are. But, you know, you were friends with our agent, so you must be a competent stand-up guy. He arrives on a motorcycle wearing a tuxedo, jumps onto the plane with Sergeant Rock. I don't know if they were expecting him, but they're not even surprised with his arrival. And the fact that he's such a fop, and they're going to send him, of all people, right? He's got a reputation. Let's say they know who he is. He is Bruce Wayne, after all. Maybe he's the J.P. Morgan of the time. They know his reputation as a playboy. And they do nothing. He's going. I like the references where he makes his name is Pimpernel, in a reference to the Scarlet Pimpernel, mm-hmm. who has an alter ego. Let's see. Now, Sergeant Rock's mission. Now, typically, from my reading of World War II, typically, they would drop paratroopers behind enemy lines to seize bridges. You see that in the invasion of Normandy. You see that in the failure of Operation Market Garden. Well, your job is to seize the bridge and hold it, so when the troops coming in get to it, the bridge is there. Sergeant Rock is sent to blow up a bridge. Okay. I got a kick out of the reference to Operation Barbarian, this plan to use nerve gas. And I looked that up. And that's actually a term. It's a colloquial term used to describe a military operation or event involving what is perceived as barbaric or uncivilized. So I like that. The use of nerve gas, perfect. I know this comes before, but the whole idea of gold being hidden in the statue and then disguised as whatever it's supposed to be, that's the whole plot of all this, really reminds me of Kelly's Heroes.
Yeah, there's definitely that kind of stuff. But it's also, the other thing it reminded me of, if you ever saw the Alfred Hitchcock movie Notorious, with Cary Grant and Ingrid Bergman, the Nazis in that have, I think it's uranium, if I remember right, in wine bottles that they're smuggling. So, there's, and that predates this. So that may have been an influence on this. I think it was uranium, if I remember right.
And then they put the bottles on the Titanic, right? No.
Bob Haney, as I'm sure you're aware, was famous for his silly conceits in Brave and the Bold. It's just like, we're going to throw these two characters together. Yeah, it'll be Commandy and Batman. What? So, but in that regard, I feel like this story almost has a little bit more gravitas than his normal team-ups do. But, the fact, I can't get past the fact that Bruce Wayne would have been active in World War II, and here it is 1969, and he's still, a relatively young man.
Right. If they had thrown some gray in his temples, and you said, oh, it's Earth 2, you could get away with that, I think.
I don't know if they had introduced an Earth 2 Batman at this time. I'm not sure when exactly they introduced an Earth 2 Batman. I believe the Robin had been introduced in that Justice League issue, where he's got the kind of composite Batman and Robin costume on the cover. I'm pretty sure that predates this. But I don't think... I don't remember ever seeing a Earth 2 Batman after Earth 1 was created at this point.
I also
it would make so much more sense if that had been the story. This is taking place on Earth 2, and Batman is now, 50 years old.
Yeah. It's also a bit of a tease, because you really don't see Batman and Sergeant Rock together. You see Bruce Wayne.
Yeah. And you know what? Surprisingly enough, Sergeant Rock is never dead.
Right, which that's another
unlike trope. The cover.
Right. In fact, that you meet Sergeant Rock in the present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was a nice touch at the end, and Sergeant Rock looks age appropriate for having been in World War II, at least as rendered here. And taking into account that this is 1969, it's not 2025.
Right.
And you also think of the cover, the pietà, because I assume you've also seen a dozen comic book covers that use this. Probably the most famous one is Superman holding Supergirl.
Yep.
But there's Cyclops holding Professor X. There's so many different ones like this.
It's amusing. It's like, you look at this cover, and unless you're 8 years old, like for someone like us, we look at it and go, oh, this is going to be fun. But you
look at all the dead people behind them. This is going to be fun.
This is going to be fun. It's like you almost can't take it seriously. Now, maybe an 8-year-old in 19-whatever sees this and goes, oh, my God, they're all dead.
And it's going to kill Sergeant Rock in Brave and the Bold.
Oh, my God. This is the end. I'm going to buy this because this is going to be worth a lot one day.
I'm going to put my kids through college with this book.
But... it's fun.
Yeah, it is fun. It's, we had the very serious, thought-provoking World War II issue. And now we have the swashbuckling spy adventure, like you said, the James Bond type storyline. So, two very, very different approaches to World War II in these books, but I think more typical of the eras in which they came out in.
You know what? It's James Bond, but it's Casino Royale. And I don't mean the new one.
You almost hear that 60s music playing in the
Right.
background.
Definitely. It's
Get
Peter Sellers.
is it Herb Albert?
I'm not sure.
Or was it Burt Bacharach? I'm not sure. It might have been both of them.
But it's
Anyway.
a great theme song.
Yeah. So I'm gonna say, again, getting to the cover, it's effective. And like you say, as an older reader, you look at it and you're kind of amused by it. And as a younger reader, you're probably blown away a little bit by it. So I'm going to say it's effective. And, it's Neil Adams. So I'm going to say it's not his best work. There's, the background is a little bit lacking. And I'm going to say, but I'm going to say, solid B for the cover. The interior art, I think, is very good, and I like the fact that Kubert is inking him somewhere. It creates almost a different look for Neil Adams than we normally have. So I'm gonna say an A minus on the interior art, and the story is wacky, Bob Haney fun, and I'm gonna say a B for the story. So overall, I'm gonna give the book a B plus.
I am right there with you. I like the cover. As wacky as it is, it's like I have to look through this like the eyes of an 8-year-old. This would be a cover that would have sucked me in a heartbeat. Batman's face looks a little derpy, if you know what I mean. Around the mouth. I'm going to give the cover a B plus, solid B plus. I just think it's a lot of fun. The interior art, I think, is very good. I think some of the coloring choices make it interesting with the purples and some of the other color choices. But I love the art. I mean, Churchill looks like he's ready to walk off the page. So I give the interior art an A minus. The story is just weird on so many levels. But you have to add in the fun factor. It's a fun story. It doesn't make logical sense, but it entertains. And ultimately, that's what this medium's about. So I'm going to give the story a B plus, based mainly on the fun factor and pushing aside well, that's not realistic. Yeah, this is an industry that has people who fly. So for an overall grade of a B plus, this was a lot of fun. I'm glad you picked this book.
Yeah, I am too. And hopefully we won't take as long to get to Storming Paradise number 4. And when we do, I'm gonna have to find the appropriate complimentary issue for that. But I look forward to
There's a whole bunch of
it.
these Batman Sergeant Rock team-ups.
Yeah, I may go there, or I may go, we may see another Sergeant Fury story, or
Sergeant
Cap,
Fury, yeah.
what's his name? There's a few. There's Captain Savage. There's definitely other war books that we could hit on, so we'll see. I haven't chosen yet, but in the meanwhile, this is fun, and I look forward to the next one, and I hope that you listeners are enjoying this. As I've been trying to mention in episodes, we have our email is back up, backtothebins@gmail.com. And we also have the Facebook page. So if you have opinions on a show and things you want us to cover, things you think about what we'd have covered, you can let us know. We'd be interested in knowing. Also, if you can give us whatever ratings, hopefully high ones, on whatever podcatcher you use, we'd appreciate that. And if you have a podcatcher of choice that is not having this show available on it, let us know and we'll see what we can do to try and get it on there. But in the meanwhile, thank you everybody for listening and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Dismissed.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiMonzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.